My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Hello there, good evening. Welcome to a killer Malaysian Grand Prix review here on the EDP Formula One podcast. So much to talk about, I'm just not going to introduce it. I'm just going to get on with it. I'm going to tell you who is here. I have Sidekick Perry. I wanted to say Simon. It's Perry Hamilton.
Hello there, Michael. My name's not Simon, no, but I appreciate your alliterative attempt.
I was getting Alan Partridge-isms in early. DT's here, Dave Tillier.
Evening.
Good evening, Dave. Straight from mid-house move.
Yes. If I fall asleep halfway through the pod, you'll understand why.
No chance. We have too much to talk about.
No,
it's too hot. And for the first time this season, the Oracle is back. And he knew he was coming back long before we did. It's Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back in now, Kyle. Right, straight in. There's too much to talk about.
Malaysia. We'll talk about Marussia.
We're going to go straight in with Jules Bianchi. What a performance.
What a drive.
They're the only team that had a good weekend, I think, by my reckoning. I don't think everyone had a bad weekend.
I don't think we're really meant to be talking about them first, DT. I think we can
Let's stop it now. Red Bull. Let's deal with it. Red Bull. Oh, my goodness me. I'm not going to explain it. It's just too mind-blowing what happened. Red Bull.
It was amazing, wasn't it? It was outstanding. It was live. It was a reality show. But it was actually real. It was none of this scripted stuff. And it was tense, but it wasn't the kind of deliberate, awkward tenseness that makes you want to look away like it's car crash TV. It was really compelling. And that's just the stuff off the track. I mean, and on the track was gripping as well. The whole thing. But, I mean... Good Lord, there's got to be some repercussions, haven't there?
Well, this is going to run for weeks, and this is probably going to be the start of the story for the rest of the season, albeit Red Bull will want this to end now.
Yeah.
But it can't, can it?
No. I've only got one thing to say. Multi-21.
Multi-21, Seb.
Yeah. I did love the way that Sebastian came up to Mark afterwards, and it wasn't kind of like, Mark, it was...
It was quite like an apologetic naughty boy who knew he did something wrong.
Oh, definitely,
but
definitely.
Was completely and utterly going to do it and then try and weasel his way out of that afterwards. Yeah. In no way am I comparing Sebastian to the noble weasel. But he knew that he was going to do it. He had no problem in doing it. And then he thought he could just do damage control afterwards. And I think anyone who watches enough Formula 1 knows that Mark Webber's not the kind of guy that you do. He's your best friend. Or is your worst enemy? And I think Seb's crossed that line personally.
And I think you can tell from the way that Red Bull treated it that it was a really big thing, because you know everyone was thinking that Red Bull are just going to get behind their golden boy. You know, Mark's the whipping boy, Vettel is their golden child. Actually, they will criticise Vettel when the time comes, and that for them to be really, really angry and quite clearly angry over the radio, and also you could see it in Christian Horner's face and Dr. What's his face? Remind me, what's the
Marco.
Helmut Marco.
Oh,
there
yes,
he
yes, yes. Yes.
Even he, who doesn't like Webber, even he seemed vaguely critical of Vettel. So it's a big deal. It's a big, big deal.
The guilt was etched on Vettel's face. The podium was just a picture.
Yes, probably was the unhappiest podium in a long while, I think.
I've never seen three people desperate to be somewhere else than on a podium of a Grand Prix.
That's possibly the worst 1-2 a team ever had as well.
It does answer the question that, yes, they are contractually obligated to spray the champagne. None of them wanted to.
No.
You could tell their hearts were not in it at all.
I'm surprised Webber didn't get the bottle and just hit Seb over the head.
I would imagine it ran through his mind. Yeah. Credit to the people who came up with the cameras and microphones in the sort of little green room where they finally take their helmets off. That just is priceless in those situations.
It spoke volumes how long Webber took to come in. And when he did finally come in, he came in with his own water bottle, didn't have to get a water bottle, and he just sat straight by the door and barely acknowledged anyone. And it was only after Sebastian Vettel really tried to get his attention. It was quite that. And as he said, as you say, multi-21, which was very quickly explained to those watching at home as to what it could mean. And but if that's your answer, that's all it is. I mean, he doesn't have to say anything else, but it was quite obvious Mark Webber was in no talking mood. It was brilliant.
Even Hamilton blanked him. Hamilton didn't speak to
him.
No, that's true.
I did wonder if he'd spoke to Mark beforehand.
Possibly.
Sort of said what he'd done. Because he was a big blank.
He wasn't in there straight away, was he, Hamilton?
No.
So someone, either Mark or someone, could have told him what had happened. Mm. I mean, he wasn't particularly happy himself anyway.
No, I loved seeing his face sitting there, just sort of, yeah, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And also the watch guy, I think it's got the best job.
He looks like a skinny Jason Statham. He does. He looks like a very skinny Jason Statham.
Yeah. There's your towel, water, watch. I just listened to you. It's brilliant.
Well, and I was going to say kudos to the podium interviews, which are proving well worth their weight in airtime, especially when Martin Brundle does them. Mm. I would have to say.
Well, Brundle asks the hard questions, which is why I was glad it was him and not David Coulthard. Because obviously with Coulthard's connection to Red Bull, it may have just been, so how did the tyres hold up? Whereas, you know, Brundle was straight in there with, what were you guys doing? You know, and it's that interviewer's responsibility to deliver what fans want, because those interviews are not just for the fans at the track, they're for the fans at home as well.
Everyone, yeah.
We want to hear exactly, it's another way of just getting us really up close and personal with the drivers. That's why you have the mics in the green room. That's why you have broadcasts of pit radio transmissions. That's now why, at least on Sky, they have a direct line to a different team boss for each race, and they can talk directly to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want that. We want that all access so much more than it's ever been before. And it's paying dividends, isn't it?
As it makes a massive difference between these kind of run-ins and, say, when Prost and Senna were going toe-to-toe and running each other off the track, literally. Mm. Can we defend Seb? Is there any part of us where we should be going, well, you know what, he was quicker. Why shouldn't he have just been left to it?
No.
Really? No,
no.
You can't.
No.
I feel a bit sorry for him now, because he's down at the moment. Everybody seems to be coming in to have their kick. Everybody's saying, you know, he should be suspended or this
I've
and
been
that.
Waiting since Sunday to have my kick on this. Don't tell me off, Kyle.
You're too late.
It seems a bit like when Schumacher, when he done wrong, everybody just jumped in. And... yeah, he's done wrong, but sometimes it's a bit too far. I think John Watson came out saying he should be suspended.
I can't feel sorry for a triple world champion that does the job of his dreams, gets paid millions of pounds to do it, and probably has a bevy of beauties in his wake. I think he was told to do something. He is employed by a company to do a job, and therefore he is responsible to that employer. He could argue that he was quicker, but actually Mark could argue he was quicker, and he was told to hold station as well. So Mark, when Mark was quick, he had the pace of Seb at any point. I would think you'd probably all agree. So I think definitely can't defend him in any light.
Yes. And reassured on a couple of occasions that Seb would not overtake him.
Mm, yeah.
It didn't help earlier. Vettel earlier was asking to be let past, which, you know, just get on with it, race, you know. It's a track where you can overtake. Overtake, and so that doesn't help that he's earlier in the race that he was asking to be let by. So,
but just I mean, yeah, we're talking about it now. Seb's a bad boy. A suspension's too far. Slap on the wrist. He's out of line. He's an employee, and he disregarded an order from a senior in his company. But let's just imagine for a minute that, you know, going round the outside of turn two, if he'd clipped him and they'd both gone and one of them had flipped or something, or coming down into turn one, or Mark hadn't realised he was going to overtake and you had a similar incident to what Mark Webber had in going up the back of Heikki and flipped the car. If there was that kind of miscommunication because one didn't expect him to be overtaking and the other one was doing it anyway, and something seriously bad had happened, then you would be looking down at Seb as far more than just a slap on the wrist. Luckily, it didn't. But this is the danger. When you put yourself... When you disregard a team order like that, you put yourself in harm's way, you put your teammates in harm's way, you put your team itself in harm's way. Now, there's nothing to say that Christian Horner wasn't sitting there going, we'll let it get down to the second to last lap, and then we'll let Seb past. He's got more points, he's ahead in the Drivers' Championship, and he's the guy that we're going to push, he's the guy we think has legitimately got a shot to be a world champion, but we'll do it on the last lap. That could have been happening. You don't know. And by Seb overtaking, Seb will never know. And so it's a really tricky one. But yeah, I mean, I think he's completely in the wrong.
I think there's a massive issue here with the breakdown of trust. I know there's obviously the issues of the ramifications of what he did and the apology that really means nothing because it changes nothing. But the issue now, I mean, I remember being at Silverstone where Mark Webber was told to back off Seb rather than chase him down, just to hold station. Just do it. And so Mark does it.
Mm.
If he gets asked that in future... why would he bother?
No. He's not gonna trust the team at all to do, you know, if he can't trust his teammate to back him up when he needs it. But I think the other thing we've also got to sort of discuss is that they agree all this before the race even starts. They will have certain scenarios that they think might happen. And they will talk about, well, what if there's a 1-2? Okay, well, we get to the last pit stop. Whoever is ahead at the last pit stop, that is a person that comes across the line first. That is what they agreed before the race. And if it was Vettel ahead, then that's the way they would have gone. And that's the agreement that they already have been set in place. So even in Mark's mind, even before he's told to hold station, that's the way that they do things.
So surely back at Milton Keynes, half of these people work pretty much for Mark. They'll be his engineers and people like that. And then you'll have the general people who are all solely geared to working for Red Bull. Essentially, they are working for the team. The Constructors' Championship is the thing they fight for. I mean, Seb's going to have a lot of animosity to deal with over the coming weeks off the back of that, surely.
Yeah, I think he's got a lot of making up to do. I mean, thankfully, he's got 3 weeks to try and do it. I think he'll be spending a lot of time in Milton Keynes. But
Mark Webber's on a surfboard in Oz.
So he's got... I say we're spending a lot of time there, and he just needs to, trust not only between him and Mark Webber, which I don't think will ever come back, but people will.
What are you doing?
I was silently complaining to DT that I was so upset that there was 3 weeks until the next race.
It's a long wait,
especially when you've had two back to back. It just really, really upset me.
Could you imagine if there'd been a back to back race after this?
Oh my god,
China would have been carnage.
I completely agree with Carl's point. I was just very upset that we're not going to have any more races for a while.
All right, we'll ride it out. Could Red Bull, and I think Christian Horner got asked this, not have said in those last 14 laps, Seb, let him through?
He wouldn't let him through.
Literally, he would just not have done it. Even though it had been a bit calmer. I mean, that was Christian Horner's excuse, as I saw it. Because they didn't even bother to ask.
I honestly don't believe he would have let him pass.
But surely you should ask. I know it's all very well, we wouldn't have done it. But
I think Christian Horner should have been more stern with Vettel as well. When he came over and, don't be silly, Seb. And that was, compare that to Ross Brawn talking to Nico.
This is brilliantly led into Carl, because Mercedes had exactly the same situation. Nico Rosberg was itching for about two-thirds of the race to get past Lewis Hamilton. He felt he was quicker, even though Lewis was conserving his car and his tyres. Now, as Lewis saw it, maybe because Nico had done a better job of conserving his car during the race, he should have been allowed to get past, and obviously therefore Lewis was looking like a glum old face on the podium. But I do think the way Mercedes dealt with it, Ross Brawn dealt with it, and even Rosberg after the race, it was all very amicable and a lot of respect there between everyone.
Rosberg's little line when he said, just remember it. And you get the feeling that Mercedes will, because you pay your dividends, you pay your dues, and it comes back to you at some point. But I think it was Brundle during commentary made a very, very astute point, which was, if everything's down pat and everything's the same, There's going to be something in Hamilton's contract that would have drawn him from McLaren to Mercedes that says, all things being equal, you will get priority to finish ahead. If we can make it happen, that's what's going to happen. Mercedes don't bring over Lewis Hamilton to give the podium to Nico Rosberg. If Rosberg's winning it and Hamilton's in sixth, brilliant. If Hamilton's in third, brilliant. They're not going to get Rosberg to back up the pack so that Hamilton can overtake. They'll let Rosberg race. But if Hamilton's already ahead, doesn't matter how much quicker Rosberg can go, there's no chance of catching the Red Bulls, and there's no chance of being caught from behind by the Ferrari. It really served no purpose. And if it serves no purpose, then I think it's quite clear that you let your new guy, your superstar signing that you went out and you fought for in the off-season to come to your team, you give him the glory moments and you give him the FaceTime. I think that's absolutely understandable. And, Ross Brawn, as you say, very professional, dealt with it perfectly. Yes, Nico, Lewis is being managed. He could go a lot faster too. You just need to stay where you are. You need to do this for the team. And that's how you do it for a team. Probably a little bit too played up to by Lewis in the post-race, interviews. Yeah.
He loves the drama. He does
love drama. I think he would have loved to have talked about anything to get away from his pit stop moment. Which was an absolute hilarious clanger which kind of has been forgotten. If there hadn't been this whole Red Bull malarkey,
that was supposed to be the highlight of the season.
Probably would have been the one thing that we were talking about. Yeah. But it's easy to do, and Jensen did it for Red Bull without having ever driven for them. So you know, it's easy enough to do.
Yeah, at least Lewis had a reason.
Years and years and years of habit, isn't it?
He had a reason for driving into the McLaren now from pit stop.
Fortunately, McLaren garage wasn't after the Mercedes garage. No. Because at that point, you would have been a real trouble, wouldn't
good
it?
Good point. Yeah,
you would have had to have gone out and done a full lap.
It's a good job he moved down.
Took a step backwards in his career.
Brilliant.
But yeah, I think Mercedes did a great job, and I think Rosberg was frustrated, but team player, and I think he will get repaid for that in the future.
Yeah. So whilst I agree with pretty much everything that the Pettit said, I don't necessarily agree with the way that Mercedes handled it overall. Yes, I think there's probably right. There probably is something in Hamilton's contract. It would be madness for him to have so many tools in his pocket, or so many bargaining chips, whatever, and not use some of those for to get what he wants. But the thing that I have, the issue I have, is that yes, Hamilton could have gone faster, but because of his middle stint, he had really taken it out of the car. Rosberg hadn't taken it out of the car, and Rosberg actually in reality could have gone quicker. It wasn't the case that Rosberg needed to conserve like Lewis did, because Lewis, he was driving around like he was driving like an Austin Allegro. Rosberg, I think, and I agree with Lewis in the sense that I think Rosberg should have been up on that podium, and I think you could see it in it, not just what Lewis said, but also in his body language, that he felt like he'd denied his teammate of something that he deserved.
Yeah, the big old bottom lip probably gave it away.
Yeah, it looked a bit embarrassed, really, I think, because he was so slow towards the end. It was ridiculous. I think he was lapping the Marussia and he didn't use DRS to go by, and I think Rosberg was struggling to keep behind him at points. So yeah, and also there's a strategy call. Did Lewis's side of the garage underfuel him by that much that maybe you could argue that they got that wrong and Rosberg's side got it right? But then you go back to, let's say you go back to maybe there's something in his contract that allows him to come ahead. Or the, well, that's Red Bull's rule, Multi-21 or whatever it's called in Mercedes, it sticks. So.
Multi-22?
Could be. Yeah.
I think Lewis was probably just grateful that he didn't actually end up going to Red Bull and have Sebastian Vettel being told to stay behind him. That would have
That would have been explosively wonderful.
Because, of course, we did learn, didn't we, that he'd approached Bernie Ecclestone to say, can you get me into Red Bull?
Which he has subsequently denied, Lewis.
Yes, of course.
But, he would.
And obviously Bernie loves a bit of controversy, so Bernie will throw stuff out and you never quite know.
And he then claimed, no, but I might be able to get you onto Mercedes. Despite the fact that Lewis already had ties with Mercedes through McLaren and Schumacher was on his way out and he was coming up to the end of his contract. It's just like, you thought of that, Bernie. Of course you did, son.
Bernie's getting a bit old. All right, then, just bring it back to Red Bull. How do we see this playing out?
Very simply put, if this isn't handled correctly by the higher-ups, there's not a lot that they can do. They can't fine Sebastian Vettel unless it's written into his contract, that they have the ability to financially penalise him for out-of-order things that he does. If it's not in his contract and they attempt to impose a fine on him, he could sue them. The FIA can't sue him because he hasn't contravened any rules. What are you going to do? You're going to bench him? You're going to make him sit out a race? Of course you're not. You're not going to not run two cars. So you'd have to find a replacement driver. You're not going to find anyone that's going to get you into the points, that's going to be available at this point in the race. Why sabotage your own constructors' goals just to punish one person? Seb's going to get away fairly scot-free, get protection like he always does, as Mark said on the podium. But there's very, very, very little they can actually do to him. Depending on the actual verbal discipline and the things that go on behind closed doors that we won't be privy to, this could very easily be Mark Webber's last season at Red Bull. You've a huge amount of damage done to the foundation of that relationship, and it does need to be repaired if they want him to keep racing for them. But I could see it being his last season with the team.
There is that saying that the straw that broke the camel's back. Well, I think it was a bale of hay. I think that in this instance.
Because he cut a pretty full-on figure. I mean, it was obviously pretty raw at the after the race for Mark.
I think we've talked about this in the past that their relationship has always been on a knife edge anyway because of situations where the team has favoured Sebastian over Mark in the past, and Mark has not liked that. And I think Ped's really quite right that even if Red Bull did want to take on Mark again, does he really want to be in that situation again? Would he rather go, you know, I mean, at his age, could he go somewhere else? Would another team take him, or would another top team take him? Probably not. You know, will he kind of in his mind go, do I really want this? You know, so it's a difficult one, but I can't see the relationship being fixed in reality. It may well be fixed on the surface from a PR perspective, but I don't think there'll ever be a trusting relationship between the two of them. And as for Vettel, I think he should be just spanked like the naughty boy that he is.
There we go. I mean, he was already getting booed on the podium in Australia.
Yeah, which is a bit of a surprise. And Max is probably an Australian crowd and obviously very supportive of Mark Webber.
If they were then imagine now.
Yeah. He's got Schumacheritis now, because he is, not only is he dominant, but he's not humble with it, I don't think. You know, when he first arrived on the scene and he was getting pole positions and the finger came out, right, it was kind of a cheeky kind of... But you see that look in his face when he's got the finger. He's really quite cocky and really quite arrogant with it. And people don't like that.
And his radio messages when he gets told that he's got P1, to me, just sound really rehearsed.
Yeah, it's a bit fake now.
They sound like, you know, at first they were like, oh my God, he doesn't know what to say, so he says some pretty stupid stuff. But now it's just like he knows people are listening and he plays to the crowd, and I think the crowd now obviously have got sick of it.
Maybe you should bring out the poetry again, then maybe that will soothe a few.
As long as the crazy frog doesn't come back, then we're
all... Oh God.
Okay, gents, it's time for this. It's the EDP F1 pit stops. Now, clearly, we've gone well over already. Issues needed to be sorted, needed to be discussed. So we're going to rattle through these quite quickly, if we may, gents. Fernando Alonso. Oops.
Should have come into the pits to change his wing after the first lap. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Made an absolutely massive howler and out for the race, and really probably not done himself too much damage to the championship in the long term. But this could have been a really good platform for him to get ahead, and he absolutely whiffed it.
Got a bit greedy, I suppose. The front wing was hanging off. He'd had opening lap corner contact, wasn't it, pretty much with Seb?
Mm. Well, I'd like to say, first of all, sorry, Fernando, for predicting an F1, for predicting a race
win. We'll be getting onto that one soon enough.
It's just a kiss of Dave.
It's clearly my fault.
He's been saving that one.
So we've got the Oracle here.
No, I predicted also... as well.
So anyone I predict. I think it was a big howler by Ferrari. I mean, you've got a broken wing. That is, get him straight in the pits. No, you know, there's no question over it. What I have to say is, how the hell did he manage to overtake people with like half a front wing? You know, he was getting past Webber on the first lap. That was amazing. That was great to watch, I have to say.
Fair enough. Lovely stuff. We touched on it earlier, Kyle. Hamilton's little wander into the McLaren pit.
It should have been, could have been the moment of the race.
Would have been.
Any other race, it probably would have been. But it was just the colours of the pit lane in...
Similar.
It was just so early. So early in the season. Yeah, it was good.
Classic. Which brings us on to McLaren. Signs of life. A little bit of a turnaround.
Yeah, I think. Well, Button should have finished fifth. I mean, they from the Australian weekend, which was just dreadful. They seem to. There's promise coming from there. Perez had a decent race. I suppose he's off the mark. He's a long run with no points. I think it's his first point since he actually signed for McLaren.
Yes, in Singapore.
And like I said, it's 3 weeks now, so hopefully they can build on that.
I think that McLaren would have been third.
Well, Jensen mentioned he was hoping for a podium.
I had another look at it after he said that, and I read it in another publication.
Other than the EDP, yes. Surely not.
He was running fifth. He was lapping Red Bull pace, doing very, very well. He was obviously managing the situation quite well, and he would have been right on the back of those Mercedes, and they wouldn't have been able to challenge him. So I think he would have start to
surely at that point, when Mercedes look out and they're at the telemetries and there's times and they see Button closing up that quickly, they have a decision to make. Do we lose both places and end up fourth and fifth, or do we let Nico off the leash, get third, and at least have Jensen have a battle, but it does drop Hamilton down to fifth? And, you know, what are your options there? I think they'd have let Nico go for
it. But Nico was still underfueled. So he wasn't at the... They were both fueled at the same
amount. But, as you know, I mean, it's all about tenths. It's all about tenths of a second. And Nico could have been that much quicker than Hamilton and still come in fueled to the right level. And I think he could have made just life a bit more difficult for Jenson Button, you know. And it's much easier to overtake, much harder to overtake someone when they're competing against you, which Hamilton wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously all talking possibilities.
Oh, yeah, it's all wishes for fishes, the world would be an ocean, DT.
But, crikey, McLaren, they're either brilliant or atrocious in the pit stops, aren't they?
Yes, really are. And it reminded me again of a bit of last year,
very much so.
The weekend. Lotus, not quite the heights of last weekend, which kind of as expected, as they didn't want it to rain. And maybe signs that in Australia they just got ahead on setup when others struggled, and that when it's all equal, they're probably about the same pace as they were last year.
I think Kimi's missing rallying by the looks of things.
He couldn't control his car, could he? I don't know what they'd done to the setup on that thing.
They seemed to lose the pace sort of Friday. They looked quite quick. I think Raikkonen was quickest in one of the practice sessions, but sort of Saturday morning just seemed to
just think the conditions clearly didn't suit them. They weren't on the right foot, and it can happen to any of the teams, really.
I've got here Jules Bianchi and Marussia. This guy is looking the real deal, isn't he?
Really, he's certainly looking the most impressive, because of given what he's been given, what he's got to drive, and the way that he's driving it, he's looking very strong. Yeah, he's only going to be in that seat for a year if he keeps this up. You know, he's not going to have long to languish at the back of the field.
And Caterham are obviously struggling to keep tabs on Marussia. They've admitted that it is last year's car that they're driving with, and it's going to be a hard few months.
I saw a brilliant meme that came out after the Malaysian Grand Prix, and it was... picture of the Caterham car coming off at one of the corners and going across the grass, and they'd superimposed behind it Guido Vandergaard walking along in his Caterham thing, and then put like some lawnmower handlebars coming out the back of the car, and the title was Guido Vandergaardner.
that pretty much sums it up. I think that sums it up. And a quick mention of Force India, who apparently can't work their wheels anymore.
It was terrible.
I mean, to have a wheel nut that effectively knocks both your drivers out of the race.
And they look quick as well. Solid. How long he's sat behind him, and then the next minute he's overtaken.
It was a real shocker, wasn't it, for Paul De Resta?
I think Force India are the Sauber of last year. This year they seem to have a solid car.
You just need to eliminate the mistakes. Simple stuff.
But apparently it's an easy fix, and they won't have that problem next race.
Okay then. Rapid fire, gents. Driver, team highlight of the week. Kyle, coming to you first.
Driver, Jules Bianchi. I'm getting there early. Team, it's quite a difficult one, really. I'll say McLaren.
As no team had a good weekend, didn't it, officially?
Say McLaren in a way, because they've improved, but ended up hardly any points. It's a really difficult one. I'll probably go Mercedes, maybe. Third and the fourth, and they thankfully their team orders didn't.
And they kept it together.
Kind of got away with that with Red Bull's team orders. So I'll go Mercedes,
Highlight? You can just take the podium if you want, or whatever you want.
I'll have to go the Hamilton pit stop.
Hilarious.
driver, I'd have to say, probably JB, to be honest. Jensen did a very good job in what we know is a bad car. Solid pace, and seems to be doing a bit of a Hamilton, really, and managing to work with a bad car, which is very unlike him. So quite impressed there. Team of the weekend, I'm going to give that to Toro Rosso for actually not appearing to seem to be on the racetrack at any point throughout the weekend.
I can't remember
them being on TV at any point. But actually realise it's probably Marussia.
I'm pretty sure I remember Ricciardo's car being retired.
Yeah, that
at some
did.
Point. Yeah, that did happen.
Yeah. Still.
So DT's given his driver of the week to a DNF and his team of the week to a one half DNF.
And of course, Ricciardo took his car off the track on the lap to the grid. So that was an achievement in itself as well.
It was that kind of a race.
It was
just that kind of a race where, you know, so much happened. And moment, we'll probably have to go back to what I said before with Alonso with half his wing off overtaking Webber on the first lap. That was pretty awesome.
I'll give it to Mark Webber because he just showed everything that a driver should be both on and off the track. I mean, we've touched on that earlier, so I won't elaborate on that necessarily. Team of the week, I'm going to go with the Oracle on that and give it to Mercedes. It's, showed the way it should have been done and showed good pace. And they were completely written off before this season started, and they actually showed that they can compete, which should be really interesting going forward. Highlight of the week just is the entirety of the pit lane. More action happened in that pit lane than most races have on track. Especially that pit lane was more interesting than the entirety of Valencia. And
because we didn't talk about the crash, did we?
There was crashes from there. No, was a number
how
of
many unsafe,
Number of unsafe releases. There was Jenson Button not getting his wheel put on properly. There was Force India couldn't get their wheels off. There was Lewis Hamilton in the wrong pit lane. There was all kinds of mayhem, havoc, and fresh hell being let loose.
Kimi and Hülkenberg was it?
That was brilliant. Same time. Kimi, you know, and they say the pit lane is part of the racing track, so you can go for it. You've got to stick to the speed limits. And Kimi had to duck in because he didn't want to cross the white line. Oh, it was immense. Everything about that pit lane was outstanding work.
As really we said, Charles Peake's race was completely ruined by Jean-Éric Vergne driving into him when he was trying to get... Oh, no, when he was driving into the pit, Jean-Éric Vergne was released and just headed straight into him. That was a...
Yeah, that was the time I remember seeing a Toro Rosso.
That was the one.
I need to give mine, I suppose, don't I? Driver, I agree with you on Webber. Paul de Rester, I mean, his race was going along swimmingly and he was kind of undone by a wheel nut that wouldn't undo. Team.
Do you reckon he got out of the car going nuts?
I hope so. Especially after being in the pit lane for what was basically 4 minutes, pretty much, sat in a pit stop, the unending pit stop.
He was most upset that no one offered him a cup of tea while he was
playing. Exactly. It could at least refueled him. Highlight, I don't know, there's enough highlights for the rest of the season.
Said ginger nuts.
No more nuts references. Oh. Come on, boys.
They've all been cleaned so far as well, which is quite good.
barely. I will mention the GP2 season started in Malaysia last weekend. Now it's a bit different for Norfolk. iSport have sold their entry to a Russian team, so they're no longer involved. ART are now simply ART. They no longer have Lotus backing, and of course Supernova went by the wayside before last year. The only team involved with a Norfolk connection is Caterham Racing, who are now of course Hingham backed but effectively based mostly in Lee Field, along with the Formula One team. They have Sergio Canamassas and Ma King Hua in the race seats this season, and they're both well off the pace. So really, I think we'll leave it there and see what happens when they come, when they get to Bahrain in a few weeks' time. Gentlemen, we have to end it there, but that's of course only part one. We'll be back in a few days, a week maybe, whenever I get to edit this or edit that. With our China preview. But for now, gents, thanks for coming in, having your chats and things, and assessing the greatest race 2013 has ever seen so far. Twitter, Perry.
I'm desperately hoping no one's taken multi21 yet. Because if they have, that's what my new handle, my new Twitter handle is going to be if it's available. But if not, you can get me at PetHD56.
Brilliant. David?
I'm at Dave Tillier.
Kyle at K Cumbers.
And I'm Michael J. Bailey. That is us. Thank you for listening. We'll be back looking ahead to China. Bye for now.